The Unpublished Podcast with Amy and James.
Hello, artists. Today we are going to talk about perfectionism.
Perfectionism, and this is very relevant to me right now because we just lost 10 minutes of recording. Very fun.
It's been messy. It's always messy.
Part of the life. You know, I reckon this is, if you were part of one of those huge podcast channels, I just feel like this would never happen.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah, you're probably right. I just feel like they'd have so many redundancies and so much backup.
Yeah, that's true. You know what? This is just part of doing it yourself. It's part of doing it in-house.
You're right. It's okay. We got to go have showers. We got to go relax. We got a bit worked up in that first 10 minutes, I thought.
I know. We were quite spicy.
Perfectionism is one of those topics that I think we're just done with.
I'm done with it.
And we have talked about it so many times. It's come back around again because, once again, as soon as Amy posts about it anywhere, it just gets a huge backlash.
Yeah.
Like, people are just committed to being perfectionists and we are done with the attitude.
Yeah, I've got a real, like, my patience is gone. Like, I feel like I have so much patience for creatives.
You are the most patient.
Tired of people defending perfectionism as a trait in creatives.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really have, I've got spice about it. Like, I've got fire about it. Like, stop fooling yourself. Like, you are absolutely fucking with your own creative journey and you are fucking with other people's creative journey. You're perpetuating a myth that is so harmful. Shut the fuck up.
Part of me wonders though, Amy, is it just a problem with definitions? Like, are people just getting angry because they think you're saying to them, when you say, don't be a perfectionist, they're saying, well, you're bad at art and you should continue to be bad at art and you'll always be bad at art.
Maybe.
For some reason.
Maybe. I mean, this is where it stems from. I wrote an inner threads because at the moment I'm editing We Need Your Art, my book, and I'm on the perfectionist chapter, which, again, is a shit show of a chapter, which is apt. But again, I think it just reflects the fact that I'm tired of this topic. Like, I'm tired of it to my bones. And I found this quote in the chapter that I really liked, and it was, perfectionism makes you a worse artist. I was like, ooh, provocative. I'll post it on threads. And the responses that we got were, not Beyonce, not Leonardo da Vinci, and not Taylor Swift.
I actually like the way they phrased the Taylor Swift one. They said, you forgot about Taylor.
Yeah. As if she was the exemption.
Yeah.
And again, like, I do wonder if this is a problem with definition. They're saying, look at them. They've never made a mistake. They're perfect. But I think that's what they're saying. They're saying these artists managed to evade making bad art. They've managed to make perfect art. And it just...
I can guarantee you that that's not true as well.
Like, I know it's not true.
Guarantee you, even if I don't know enough about this, maybe Beyonce and Taylor Swift have said in the past that they said, oh, I'm a perfectionist. Usually when they say that, what they mean is that they put a lot of time and effort into their art.
They have standards for
their
art.
Which is a different thing. It's a different thing. And I think that it's really harmful when these big artists say they're perfectionists, because what people hear is you should wait until your projects are perfect. But what they're actually saying is, I have a great team around me. I am really confident in my ability. I've done a lot of practice. I like to tinker with something quite a lot. I like to get it to a standard I'm really happy with. And then it is done, because they eventually release the music, because they do. So, you know, the problem with a lot of perfectionists is they never release anything, let alone start things. So I think when we're talking about these big artists, I can tell you for a fact that they aren't perfectionists, because they're constantly making art. They're constantly releasing it. And, like, they just have this workflow that works. Like, perfectionism is usually the sign of a dysregulated artist, an artist who has been told and sold a really bad story by society, which is that they have to be perfect all the time. Mm. They can't fail. Mm. I know for a fact that Taylor Swift doesn't have that story, because she's always striving.
Yeah. And, again, I think we're confusing wanting to make good art with being a perfectionist. And it's just, it's the worst mistranslation. Like, it pisses me off.
You can make consistent, great art and not be a perfectionist.
I agree.
In fact, I think it's much more likely that you will make...
No, it is. It's, you can't be an abundant and joyful creative if you keep engaging in perfectionist stories.
Can you say exactly why?
Because if we engage in narratives of perfectionism, it means we constantly require ourselves only the very best. And we only become good artists through making bad and mediocre art. We only get good, we only get mastery when we allow ourselves to learn from mistakes, when we get to fail a lot and we have to go through this process of fucking ourselves over, fucking up, making mistakes, making bad art in order to become good at what we do. There is no getting good unless you are willing to be bad, and perfectionists don't allow the space for them to be bad because they've been taught a story that they're not lovable when they're bad, that they're not worthy when they're bad, that they can't be accepted by society if they are not to a specific standard.
And I even think this whole idea of getting good is almost a fallacy, because even once you've quote unquote got good, like even once you're at Taylor Swift's level of mastery, even once you're at Beyonce's level of mastery, you still have first drafts.
100%.
Like, I'm sure that whatever Taylor's latest album was, whatever Beyonce's latest album was, like, do you think the Texas Hold'em just came out as it was? Or do you reckon she just sang it one day immediately? No, she would have had teams of people working on that. Like, it would have been absolutely garbage at first, I'm guessing. Like, or if not garbage, like I'm guessing there were sections of it that would have been unplayable.
They didn't work, yeah.
And they worked on it and they made it better through a process of iteration, which is quite, in many cases, very workmanlike. I'm guessing.
Very workmanlike.
It's just it's just a whittling away. There's no I'm good now and therefore my first drafts, my first attempts are always perfect. It's like, no, there's still a process of putting junk on the table and making that junk better.
Yeah.
So I think perfectionists are afraid to even put the junk on the table usually. Like, well, that's the big problem. That's the sign of the perfectionist. Yeah. I'm too scared to even put my junk on the table, even though I know for a fact that I will have to put the junk on the table to get to something good.
Yeah. I have a sign that says, if you can't point to the big pile of recently made bad art, then you're not doing the work.
You know, and I know there's someone who will listen to this and go, James just said Beyonce sucks. I'm like, I didn't. Like, this
Beyonce
is what people
needs
hear.
To suck sometimes that, like, in order to be good.
Sometimes even the greatest artists in the world make suck. Mediocre art.
Yeah.
But then they have the opportunity to make it better, and that's okay. But they never make it perfect because there's no such thing as perfection.
And I think that's also why this conversation is complicated, because of this, like, subjectivity of art in general. It's like, to a lot of people, Taylor Swift's art isn't perfect at all. Like, a lot of people really don't enjoy Taylor Swift's music. So, like, then it's like, you know, anyway, it's just so dense. It's such a hard space to navigate, and people get so pissed. And I think it's very emotional, because I think a lot of people really attach themselves to, you know, if I'm perfect and if I associate with being a perfectionist, then I can avoid pain.
We talked about this loop before on our previous recording that failed. And it was based on a post that Amy and I did together, which was the perfectionist cycle of doom, which basically goes, if I make perfect art, I will succeed. And then either they make something and it fails, in inverted commas, or they make something and it succeeds, in inverted commas. And if they fail, they go, well, I wasn't perfect enough. And if they succeed, they go, it's because I strove for perfection. And either way, they both lead to the same outcome, which is I must make perfect art. Mm. Even though, as you can see, it's a logical fallacy, because no matter what happened, you were going to come to the same conclusion. Like, there was no way you were going to get out of that cycle. So the cycle just is a lie.
Yeah. We also spoke about Da Vinci in the first recording.
Yeah, and I went away and I did a little bit of research.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, so Da Vinci is considered by many to be a perfectionist, but it's actually incredibly unclear. So Da Vinci doesn't finish a lot of paintings.
Yeah.
But it's really unclear if it's because he genuinely didn't, for starters, some of them, like, he didn't finish, but it's because he just said, oh, you know, I wasn't happy with the result in the end.
Yeah.
Some of them literally are undone.
Yeah.
Like, they're literally not finished. Like, he hasn't painted them.
Right.
But he had so many interests. It is so hard to tell, apparently, in the record, whether he just abandoned it because he was bored and he wanted to do, like, math or something, or if he genuinely was like, oh, no, I couldn't. I have to spend so long tinkering it on this. It's like, the guy had so many interests.
Yeah.
And then the other thing we talked about was Michelangelo and how in Florence at the Uffizi, there's these four unfinished sculptures. Apparently there are two more at the Louvre. And we were saying, oh, maybe he was a perfectionist and he couldn't finish the sculptures. But what actually just happened was that the Pope was like, sorry, you have to work on the Sistine Chapel. So yeah, that's why he didn't finish them.
It's super interesting. I think another complex version, or another complexity in this conversation, is the fact that, like, we are not perfectionists. We deal with perfectionist narratives. And, you know, I'm sure they did deal with perfectionist narratives, but it was only, I'm sure Da Vinci dealt with things that said, I have to be good, I have to be perfect, but they only held him back. They didn't make him great.
Yeah. And in fact, Da Vinci overcame all of that because he was a famous experimenter. Like, he experimented with everything, like so many different techniques. Like, he tried every single fucking technique, and I'm sure he ruined multiple, like hundreds of canvases probably, because he tried absolutely everything under the sun at some point.
Very cool.
And he was willing to experiment and play.
Yeah.
And yes, he didn't have a huge output of paintings, but once again, like, he wasn't mainly a painter.
Yes.
He did a lot of other things. He was such a polymath. Like, he was trying everything out. And in fact, apparently later in his life, people were begging him to do more paintings. And he was like, nah, I don't really want to. And he just had other things on his mind, you know? And he was, you know, he studied really hard to be a painter. He trained really hard. He had other interests. He experimented a lot. And that's how he eventually got to a place where he made some of the best art of the Renaissance.
Amazing. I really like him. I went to his house in France. He, like, was where he died. And it's a real cool memory for me. It was when I was quite young and I was just completely entranced. Like, all his, they had a lot of his, like, experiments everywhere. And it was in this incredible, like, cottage. And it was just like, he had all these bizarre ideas and you could really feel it was like a place he must have asked the question, what do you think about this? Or do you reckon I could do this? So many times. And I think it's like at the core of creative beings, like, what about this? And I love that.
I agree. Yeah. He must have. And that's what he did constantly. It was what if I, apparently, you know, he tried several times painting with his fingernails, painting with his hands, painting crazy. Like all these sort of things.
I love that.
All these different techniques and incorporated them into multiple different paintings. And sometimes they just didn't work.
Yes. And I think when we get, you know, to a space of mastery, if we are interested in mastery, I think we have to go through like all these experimentation stages and we have to go through all of these like hours and hours of just putting the work in. And we experimentation like that and like those hours in the chair doing the art, like, they require mess and they do not allow for these perfectionist standards. And but that's how we get good, you know. Anyway, I just think that's so interesting.
Yeah, and I think there's just so much pain out there from artists who are never finishing anything and never starting anything. And I just want you to know, if you're one of those people, there's nothing wrong with you.
You've been told
the wrong way to get good at art, basically. Yeah, and the wrong way to succeed.
The thing is that art is like the most vulnerable thing that we do. And so we have this like perfect solve, which is, well, if I'm perfect, then I can cure art of all its vulnerability. And I never have to be vulnerable. I never have to be exposed, because if I'm always perfect, I'll never be fallible. But art demands failure.
No artist is exempt from failure.
No.
Everyone's failed. You always say, and you said in one of your posts recently, like, I'd love to hear from hundreds of big artists if they could just say, please tell me, like, when did you have silence? Like, when did you fail early in your career? I'd love if those stories were more public.
Me too. That's what I was thinking this morning.
Because you just don't see it.
I was reading these fucking... Excuse me. I'm going to collect myself. Oh, wait, sorry. My mic's far away. I was reading these responses to my thread. And I was like, I need Beyonce to reply to this person. And I need fucking Da Vinci to come from the grave and discuss with this person how wrong they are. And how messy it was. And how just like gritty it is to be an artist. It is not fair for you to demand perfection or to demand really, really high standards from yourself during this process, because you don't get where you want to go without fucking around and playing and being messy. And it's just, it's heartbreaking to me to see so many artists who don't believe that they are worthy of creating unless it is quote unquote good. And I want to speak to these incredibly successful artists, because I don't feel like the stories are being told enough. Like, I want to talk to Beyonce, like, what was it like to navigate the silence when no one wanted to listen to you? What was it like for you to make a piece of music that you absolutely fucking hated? And I'm excited, hopefully, to invite that into my journey one day, because I want to make a book of it, even though me and James notoriously hate anecdote books.
We do. Maybe when we do it, we'll somehow make
maybe
it
Maybe we'll make it better.
To be clear, sometimes they're nice, but I think that the modern nonfiction has gone way overboard to the point where if you read a modern nonfiction book, almost 50% of it will just be some fucking random anecdote about Jane Eyre or something. Jane Austen, sorry, not Jane Eyre. And you're like, okay, like, interesting, but why?
Yeah, I agree. Small tangent.
And I think it's because people don't
want to do
trust
what?
Their own. They do a lot of work. The problem is they've done so much research that they want to put the research into the book, where it's like, well, you actually should have spent more time making an argument.
Yeah. I also have a feeling that maybe this is just us.
Maybe.
Maybe some people
I think there's
love
a school.
It.
I think people are getting trained in this method through some kind of like, there's this club
of often
male nonfiction writers. It's like the, you know, some of the greats, like, who are great books that I love, like Michael Lewis and stuff. I think he kind of is one of the fathers of this. And yeah, sometimes they do it really well and it's really interesting, but then you come away from the book and you're like, wait,
what did Michael Lewis say? Oh, yeah. He just told me a load of stories about a load of people.
Which, I mean, it's different because anyway. Michael Lewis makes biography often telling a story. But yeah, sorry. What were we talking about again?
We were talking about perfectionism and how I want to interview a load of famous people.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to hear. It's not told enough. Why don't we hear about this enough? And I want failure to be spoken about easily and all the time from everyone all along the journey. You know, when I shared my list of failures, that post popped off. People could not believe I was being so open and vulnerable about talking about my failures. I'm like, this is what made me. This is like more important than my successes.
We always talk about if you had gotten that book deal for your fiction disaster. In 2016, it would have been horrible for you.
Disaster.
And specifically, it would have been horrible for you because you weren't ready for any kind of success. Like, you weren't ready to, you weren't in a place where you'd picked yourself yet. Like, you weren't in a place where you
hadn't picked myself.
Had certain skills. Like, you have certain skills now that just make being a professional artist, being a professional writer so much easier and better.
The path I'm on is so ordained and so where I'm meant to be. And I just can't believe it.
But at the beginning, there's like almost 10 years of quote unquote failure.
Yes.
Just were extremely painful.
And I was extremely painful, and people, exquisitely painful.
I think understandably go, well,
I don't want that.
If I just never try, I'll never have to experience that pain. And that's totally true. But you'll also never get to experience the joy of completing art.
It was so fucking worth it. I'm getting to finish books.
Yeah.
Getting to see my book babies out there. It's just been so worth it. Yeah, I think a lot of this knee-jerk reaction is I've taken away someone's comfort blanket. I've ripped it off them and now they're like, fuck you, give it back, I'm cold.
Yeah.
This idea, I think, of, you know, I've got to be fully trained before I begin. I've got to have a studio before I begin. I've got to have my children grown up before I begin or before I finish is another big one. Perfectionists, people with perfectionist narratives will always struggle to finish because finish means calling something done and people with perfectionist narratives think done means perfect. So we don't get a lot of finished art from people who are really involved with perfectionism narratives because it's so vulnerable to call something done. So, you know, oh, I've got to fiddle around with this a bit more. Oh, I need to have a few more eyes upon it before I release it. Oh, I don't even know how to market, so I'm not going to release it. Like, God, it's hard.
It's so hard.
Like, and again, we lose so much art because people are engaging in these narratives of perfectionism, and it is so heartbreaking, and it is the biggest block that I see creatives navigate. It causes chronic procrastination.
It also causes boring art because it means you won't take risks in your art.
Amen.
It means you won't write. So once again, writer bias coming out. But for example, it means that if you're writing, you're going to write to a formula. You're going to write, which is nothing wrong with that, but it just means that, you know, if you don't want to write to a formula, then your art will ultimately be incredibly boring or to you personally. If you don't want to push anything, if you don't want to try anything, like all your characters will be flat. All of your plot lines will be flat, boring. If you are a perfectionist, because it's like, well, what does perfectionism mean in the context of art? It means stagnant. It means staleness.
Yeah, staleness. The same.
Getting squashed down and flattened. It means again, no mistakes.
We don't get to get good without playing and messing around and taking risks.
And usually what people love about art forms, what people love about mediums is the slightly weirdness. Like,
yes.
I was saying to my friend Pat today, and this might not resonate with many of you, but we both obsessed with this series of games by this company called From Software, like Dark Souls, Bloodborne. The most recent one is Elden Ring. And in these games, there's a way to message each other, but by leaving these sort of signs on the ground, you can see what messages other players have left to you. But they only give you like a few words you can use. So you have to make these kind of bizarre things that end up sounding like poetry. And they're kind of imperfect, dumb, stupid messages, but they're so beautiful. And they create this lexicon of this way of speaking to each other that just comes out as, I don't know, it's this almost transcendent experience where someone's trying to communicate with you imperfectly and you're trying to interpret them imperfectly, and it creates this beautiful moment of touching another soul who's played the same part of a game as you and tried desperately to communicate with you what to do next. Or even sometimes they lie to you or tell you the wrong thing or something, and it's just this amazing kind of dance.
Yeah.
And I think that is art in itself.
I want to see humanness in my art. I want to see you know, fallibility. And I think that's a perfect example of it. Very human.
I mean, the whole game is about that, because I'm so sorry to go on this divergent, because the whole game, the point of the game is it's incredibly difficult and you just learn by dying constantly. And the point of the game is to continuously die until you get good enough to get
to beat it. Do you think it teaches your central nervous system that it's okay to fail?
Totally.
Do you reckon?
It's like doing an ice bath or something.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to be incredibly stressed for 30 seconds right now, and then I'm going to get to relax.
That's so interesting.
And regulate.
And I guess, you know, it's just a trial by fire. Like, you keep having to fail.
You do. Literally, you cannot start playing these games and not continuously fail. And people do bounce off the games in the first few hours. So they go, it's too hard. It's bullshit. Mm. But if you literally just keep going, then something magical happens and you just beat the game.
Yeah.
Eventually.
I'm going to talk about comedy now.
Great.
Because I'm reading Steve Martin's autobiography, Born Standing Up, and I love it. I learn a lot from stand-up comedians. I actually think they're... Am I allowed a favorite type of artist?
Yeah, sure. It's your personal preference.
It is my personal preference. My personal preference.
Personal preference.
I love listening to stand-up comedians because I think they're everything's just like heightened, right? Like if they fail, it's so acute because it's in the moment and like no one laughs at you. And if they win, it's so acute. And they are such experimenters. And Steve's just talking about like the thousands of hours he put into developing a show before he got famous, like thousands of hours. And he would take meticulous notes, you know, about when something didn't work, when something did work. And again, like it was just, it's so beautiful and spectacular to watch these creatives master their craft. And the way they're mastering their craft is by making shitty art. It's by failing and by figuring out and being curious about why they failed. And I'm just obsessed with him. I love him. I love his sense of humor, but I just love this like commitment and curiosity that he had, almost like academic curiosity he had about what made people joyful and laugh and what didn't.
I'm actually really jealous of stand-ups because you can have that immediate feedback.
You have immediate feedback, yeah.
It perfectly fits, or much more neatly fits into the framework of learning that you get from like the 10,000 hours stuff, where you need to have the direct immediate feedback.
Yes.
Whereas something like writing, it's actually really hard to know if you've done something good.
That's why Instagram is great for me, because I can test out an idea immediately.
I think that's why you've gotten good at writing nonfiction is like,
thank you.
Bam, idea, bam, test it out, see what happens. It's almost like a stand-up cycle. Whereas writing long-form fiction,
it's really hard.
You have no idea. Like, you're just in this ocean of, is it good? And that's really painful because you're like, well, maybe I've just got to keep going until I know it's perfect. That's never going to happen.
Nope. So interesting. Such an interesting conversation and obviously such a painful one. I think there's also this other really big conversation, and this was a big problem I had with the book, because it's only one chapter. And I was like, there's also a huge conversation to have around like, why do you have these narratives? And culturally, like, why do we have so many perfectionists here? I mean, obviously the nature of art itself is very vulnerable, so I understand why the knee-jerk reaction is to defend yourself with perfectionism. You know, it is a defensive mood, not offensive. And again, I think that's why you don't get good art when you're a perfectionist, because you're defending yourself rather than like attacking something. I don't know what I was saying.
Yeah, no, I love that analogy. I agree. It's like you have to fight for your art, and perfectionism,
it's active.
Yeah.
It can't be closed off.
And once again, no fault of yours if you're a perfectionist.
Oh, that's what I was saying.
Because it's like, society has told you it's not safe to be an artist. Society has told you that artists are stupid and dumb.
Yeah.
And that they should just go get a real job. So, of course, you're going to try and defend yourself. Like, of course you are. It's not your fault.
And then the other side of that story is that the artists are the elite. The artists are the very best. And so it's like, you're either going to be a loser or you're going to have to like try and be one of the greats. Mm. And that perpetuates perfectionism too.
Yeah. And of course, and you do not have to be Beyonce.
No.
Or Taylor Swift. Like, you don't have
also,
to
also, like, when it comes to that level of success, like, there's a huge amount of luck that's happening there.
Yeah, yeah. And there's literally nothing wrong with just making the median wage as an artist.
It's a beautiful, beautiful fucking thing.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying before I got distracted with that offensive, defensive thing, is I was talking about, like, the conversation of how did this get here. And I think for a lot of perfectionists, I'm really leaning away from calling people perfectionists. For a lot of people who are really dealing with a lot of perfectionist narratives, I think it's time to start looking at where they came from. Like, so much comes from parents who, you know, you only got praise when you did really well. You know, you are only worthy of love when you got great, you know, exam results. Like, our school systems perpetuate perfectionism. Like, we were ranked from one to last at our school, which always really shocked me. Like, of course, these kind of things, like the structures of our society, I think perpetuate a system where you think I have to be of incredible standards.
Well, also that you can be, like, by ranking everyone one to last, you can be one.
Yeah.
You can essentially be perfect, which is just ridiculous. And not,
it is
and
ridiculous.
You can score 100% on a test.
Yeah.
You can't score 100% on art.
But
it's
they were ranking art in schools.
It's crazy. In the quote unquote real world, I feel like I've said quote unquote more than in this 30 minutes than I've said it in my entire life. But
that's the first time I've noticed.
Unquote real world, no one is able to assign an actual grade to your art. Mm. You can't get 100 on your art.
Yeah. So if this is something you're really struggling to navigate with, and you're feeling like your perfectionism is holding you back for whatever way, like, to please give yourself a huge amount of compassion as you navigate why. But try to understand. I think it's important to try and understand, like, this is not your inherent, like, being. Like, this is a story you've picked up along the way, and you are so deserving of making mess. And if you want to pursue this creative way, and if you want a creative abundance or creative success, like, it's time to start letting you and your body know that it is safe and imperative to make shitty art, to make mistakes, to fail.
Amazing. I love that.
Should we finish it there?
Yeah, I have a few announcements to make.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
If you are in Los Angeles or San Francisco or really anywhere in the US and you want to come and meet Amy and I live, we are doing two talks. Five hours. 5 hours of live teaching in LA and San Francisco. May 25th.
Yeah.
It's the Saturday.
That's in LA.
Los Angeles. And then the next Saturday, which June I think 1st. Is the 1st of June. In San Francisco. It's going to be 5 hours. We're going to do there's a waiting list actually up on the website at the moment. Maybe by the time this comes out, you'll be able to buy a ticket. They're going out first to the waiting list. And what we're going to be doing is a really interesting pricing structure. So
yes,
we're going to have essentially pay what you want, but with perks going up the scale. So I think basically we're going to price it so that if you want to, you can just help us break even. So there's a pricing tier that's just going to be like $50. That's pretty much what it costs us per person to hire the venue. And then it's going to go up from there. And then it's going to be, I think one of the tiers is Amy will hand make you a sign at the event.
Yeah.
And like there's a top tier. There's going to be only one available, which is, you know, a crazy amount of money. And it's come and have a meal with us and have a coaching session with Amy.
Yeah.
And that's basically you're subsidizing other people's tickets if you choose that option. And we're really grateful for you.
Yeah, I think we were really discussing, like, we know that there's there's so much pain at the moment with cost of living and everything that's happening. Like, how can we make this structured so that we can be supported, but also so that the artists that need it can be supported too.
Yeah. So if everyone chooses the $50 option, that's totally fine. Like, we've broken even. It wasn't a waste of our time to come over there. We've got to meet all these amazing artists. We haven't had to, it hasn't cost us anything. That's awesome. If a few people choose the higher options, and that's great for us. It means that, we can be rewarded for our work. We can make some money on the tour, which is obviously also great, and it supports us continuing to do our work here. So, yeah, really interested.
It is interesting. It was one of those, what do you think about if we did something like this?
Yeah, it might be complete.
It might not work at all.
It might not work at all. I'm confident. I think it'll be good.
I think it'll be good too. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Okay, baby.
The other one was I'm really bummed that so many of you ghosted us on the Would You Rather episode because it did not perform well.
It didn't.
And I don't really care, but I just feel sad for you because I thought it was a banger of an episode.
Would You Rather? That's a shame.
Often when we try, we do a Q&A episode or we do a Would You Rather, something a bit silly that's a bit more low effort for us.
It's not a very, it's not a compelling title. I reckon that's the problem.
But how do you make it compelling?
Well, you should have said something like, Amy would rather write in poop than...
I can't even remember.
It got real bad.
But it was a lot of fun. I thought there was... And also, it wasn't just us being goofy. It was us...
There was good conversations.
Yeah, ended up being serious conversations about why we would rather do one kind of thing than another. And it was good. So please go and listen to that. Just not because we really care. Once again, like, we don't make any money from this podcast. So it doesn't in any way materially impact us. I just think you'd find it enjoyable.
I agree.
And that's pretty much all I have to say.
Is that your announcement? Great.
So, yeah.
Okay. Love you guys.
Love you guys. Bye.